Welcome back to Startup to Success on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3, SoCalArmenian.com.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Now, speaking of why, I've come across a lot of organizations that aren't clear what their why is. Why are you here? We have so many organizations, companies. Do we really need another one that's not really solving a problem? And I think you covered it, but if you can just, I want the listeners to really understand why you guys exist and what is the problem that you guys are trying to solve and how we can support you guys further, whether it's through donations or volunteers, or I don't know, just let us know how we can support you guys.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I mean, yes, there's a donation button on our website, of course, and things like that. I think for us, we are mission driven. We believe in our model. We believe there is a true, authentic, lasting, sustainable impact in the work. So what we really hope to see is more individuals and more organizations, you know, so make that change. So again, if change needs to happen on those four levels I mentioned earlier, the personal, interpersonal, cultural, institutional, we've got our own work to do. Personally, I still have work to do. I mean, I got there, I'm finished now. It's a continuum. And at the same time, many of me's and many of you's, many individuals make the organization and then create the culture. So when I think about even like why I'm at Visions, there's a lot of reasons why I'm at Visions, but what keeps me at Visions is that culture, is that we're very cooperative. We really check in with one another and we focus more on that process than the goal. There's so much learning to be had in that process. So we allow ourselves to slow down and take a moment and see what comes up for us and what we've learned in that process and, you know, pivot and if we need to. So for us, it's to see the world look differently on those four levels. It's, you know, and we also talk about how the three dimensions of change, our affective, emotional. So how are we feeling about the oppression or whatever? We're very openly talking about our feelings in the workplace. We check in. Every meeting starts with a check-in of how are we today? What are we showing up with? Because we're really people first. And at the cognitive, you know, how are we thinking about things? We've caught whether it's racism or whatever form of oppression, we've caught it since we were really young. No one necessarily had to tell us this is how you have to think or believe. It's the world around us that's helped us make our decisions and our opinions and create that personal script for ourselves. So how do we impact the way we think about things? And then the third dimension being behavior. So now that we've kind of figured this out, how are we behaving with the information that we have? So again, I mean, we do work with organizations, we do personal level work. And I would just invite everybody to look into our 4-day workshops, you know, for the personal level, talk to your, I mean, a lot of times it's through HR, it doesn't have to be, talk to people who are decision makers in your organization and see what they're doing for, you know, the buzzword now is DEI, but whatever you want to call it, cross-cultural communication, conflict resolution, you know, restorative practices, whatever it is, and just see what you have in place and if you need any support. And the reality is one of our really key pieces to our work is no blame and shame of self or others. And I think that's really unique oftentimes. And I think especially these days, it's hard. People have so much passion toward this work or towards this topic. And so that fire sometimes comes off a little bit blame and shamey. And so we really try hard to make sure that that's not part of our process so that people can really take it in, you know, be vulnerable, be honest about how you're feeling. It's not your fault. We all have our biases. And again, we've had these biases since pretty much birth. So just being aware of those things.
How do you tell someone when they've had a bad experience with somebody and they just unconsciously tend to just judge people because they had a bad experience with one person from that culture, and then they just unconsciously think that everyone else, you know, within that ethnic background are the same? What's your suggestion for issues like that? Are you able to help people overcome that?
Well, again, I think this is not a, you know, one time and you're done type thing. It's definitely a process. It's definitely a lifelong journey. I think just even acknowledging that you recognize that is a huge step. You know, being able to say, I know I had this one experience, and now I know that I'm saying this entire ethnic group or entire gender or whatever. I mean, just even acknowledging that is huge. And as we were talking about earlier, the both and, there is a reality to that for that person. And to diminish that isn't going to help anything. So, I mean, our work is actually rooted in transactional analysis. It's rooted in psychotherapy. So it is a vigorous intervention insofar as, you know, that cognitive, affective, behavioral piece, it works because it's part of a true, you know, evidence-based practice. And I think being able to share that script, the why, you know, that's caused that, and the connectedness of all of us, and being able to say, well, you know, have you met anyone else from that ethnic group that wasn't that way? It just helps the mindfulness around your thoughts. So again, it's not going to be an overnight. It's not intended to be overnight. And I think just being able to like not being open to having the conversation and being able to acknowledge that is a huge first step.
I live in Los Angeles, so we have people from all over the world here, you know, and that's what I love about LA. Like a lot of times my husband and I thought about leaving LA, but I think I would have a hard time if I go somewhere and I don't see the diversity that I see in Los Angeles. If you see my group of friends, my colleagues, they're all from different cultures and nationalities. And I take my friendship so seriously, where I love learning about their backgrounds, about the food. And I especially love learning about how they deal with problems. Because I find myself that sometimes the way we're programmed, or the way we were raised, or the way, sadly, whatever situations, political situations we were in, can program us, and then we end up filtering things through that programming. And so sometimes when I have an issue or whatever it may be, and I speak to my Korean friend, you know, she thinks so logically, and I'm just like, you're a girl, how can you be so logical? Guys are usually logical, you know. But then I realize that it's a bit of a cultural thing too. They're just trained to think a certain way. So for me personally, the diversity in LA, in my opinion, is going to be the future of the world. That's just, I feel like our world is going to become one, hopefully one happy place with people living amongst each other, all diverse from different cultures, different backgrounds. And eventually they're all going to get mixed up and not really care about who's from where, whatever. That's my hope. And it's so funny because when I started my agency about almost six years ago, I was having a hard time with the name. I really wanted to choose a name that really stood for something that meant something for me. And I named it Globify, and I copyrighted the name Globally Minded, Locally Connected, because I just love being globally minded. I feel like when you are open to others, to diversity, to other cultures, to anyone who's different, period. It doesn't have to be the men, women, whatever gender they want to call themselves, they, him, she, whatever. It just makes life so much happier. And it's just, and that's been our motto in the marketing agency, to kind of continue that everything we do, every campaign we do, is tied back to what do we believe in? How does this, when we take on clients, we have to make sure that they value the same things that we value as an agency. Tell me a little bit about the Spring Summit that's coming up. Where, how can the listeners get involved?
Yeah. Again, I love what you were just saying, and it resonated. So I'll happily share about the Spring Summit. It is virtual. It's on May 12th on our website, visions-inc.org. You can learn a little bit more about the schedule, and the topics we're going to be going over. We have some really great speakers. I'm very excited about it. And we're going to continue kind of dropping the clues of who the speakers are in the next couple of weeks. And you can sign up for our newsletter there so you can get the updates. So what really resonated with me is I just moved to New England from Southern California. My parents are still in Southern California, and I moved to a town. So I moved out here for work. And again, I thought I had to be in an office every single day. And of course, a week later, that changed. And so my partner's family is also in New England. And so we kind of chose a place. We literally pretty much pointed at a map and thought, what's in between, in the office and family? And we're here, and it's beautiful. It's coastal. It reminds me a lot of Southern California in terms of the, you know, we have a beach 3 miles away. It's different from weather. However, we live in a town that is 98% white, and I feel it. You see just how monocultural it is. It's not just being white, but that dominant culture, you just sense it. And it's funny because I really thought about Los Angeles or Southern California in general and how much more diversity I felt there was. And I do believe it's definitely different than the 98% white here. However, I was really reflecting on, even in Southern California, for a lot of places, it's pretty segregated. You know, you think about your neighborhood, and maybe yours is different, but for a lot of people, even in Southern California, people live amongst like whoever's like them. And that's a very natural alternative behavior, we say. It's called avoidance of contact. And you think about who your friends are, who you work with, just people around you. And so it's not very surprising to see that. It's just the unknown. People are different. And people are different sometimes scares others. So that's something I really noticed being out here and reflecting back about it on places like Southern California or California, where people generally say is so diverse. And then you start thinking about, well, you know, my high school, how many percentage of non-white did we really have? Or how many in on my street, how many people of color did I have? You know, like those types of thoughts start coming up, and you realize that yes, it's better than a lot of places in the country in that regard in terms of diversity. And there's still a lot of work to do.
I agree. When I tell people I'm Armenian, a lot of people assume I'm from Glendale. I'm like, no, I'm not from Glendale. I actually live in the Valley. And they're like, what do you mean? What kind of an Armenian are you not living in Glendale? It's just, it's kind of sad.
Assumption.
But like, it's really true when you were mentioning how even within Los Angeles, you see the segregation. Tell me a little bit about being a nonprofit and some of the opportunities as well as the challenges that you guys face day to day with funding. With you guys have this mission, right? But you, at the end of the day, need money to do what you do best.
Right.
So how do you deal with that in terms of the money part?
Surviving. You know, there's so much to share about that. And I'll share about the history first and then kind of what my experience in the last 2 years was. And I think this relates to the conversation that you generally have with your audience. But as the organization, as a nonprofit started 7 years ago, there was a realization that there are, you know, these Black women, so forget women of color, they're specifically Black women in the South who are trying to get grants and ask for donations. They were not getting the support they needed, you know, and I don't think that surprises many people who hear that. They were not receiving the support that they needed from a lot of people around them. And I don't mean friends and family, of course, but just, you know, going out and reaching out. And so our founders were actually brilliant to create a model that isn't dependent on donations. So in all reality, we charge, you know, especially corporate clients, let's say, for the work as they can afford it. And we are able to, you know, have that trickle down to organizations, community organizations, so on and so forth, that might not be able to. And of course, we still try for grants. And of course, we still very much appreciate donations. But they did it in a way that we wouldn't. I mean, I think when you think about, it was a women-led organization, and it was a woman of color-led organization back in the 80s, and they've lasted this long. I mean, how many organizations do? So they were brilliant. And then I'll kind of fast forward to the last 2 years that I've been around, and I'll admit, first month I start, COVID hits, business stops. And as I mentioned earlier, we're a very relational organization. We very much value relationships and people. And that's where a lot of our work has always come, is word of mouth, and people know us, trust us, and tell their colleagues or whomever. So anyways, it's been face-to-face traditionally. And of course we couldn't do that with COVID. So there was a moment of fear of, what are we going to do? And so that was part of the conversation, was we're going to have to go online. And that's okay, because it actually saves a lot of money for organizations who are open to that. And you know, we definitely had some companies who said, we're going to wait until after COVID. And we said, that's fine. You can wait. But I say that to say, a month later, not to say that this was the only murders that we've ever heard of, but for whatever reason, you know, when George Floyd was murdered, there was a reawakening. And so we were really fortunate to be prepared to support those who needed the support at that time, because we had already pivoted more, you know, generally to virtual work. But again, it was scary. I think I was the right person at the right place at the right time, because I was very comfortable pivoting in that way, pivoting period, and then pivoting in that way. So when we think about funding, you know, we were lucky. And in some ways, a lot of the world, you know, opened their eyes to the realities that are around us, the systemic issues, interpersonal issues that we're still hearing and seeing every day. in this regard. So we also are trying to find ways to have passive income. You know, we have an e-learning course. So if we can't travel and we, for whatever reason, can't be face-to-face or even Zoom-to-Zoom face, there is work that we can still support our clients, whether it's an e-learning platform, whether it's, you know, we have a youth program and there's a youth program. It's also kind of an e-learning platform. And we're trying to figure out ways of doing that as much as possible, knowing that you don't, and I think that's the reality. We couldn't have imagined what COVID was going to do to the world. And so we just want to be prepared for anything that can come up.
I love it. And it sounds to me like COVID gave you the ability to scale what you do to a whole different level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will say, you know, being a new person in the organization in this way and still valuing so much our history and our roots, we actually are working on a film that we're hoping is going to come out this summer. And it really memorializes our founders, our elders, and just who they are, why they started the work, why it's so important, how kind of sad it is that we're still needing to have this conversation decades later. So I am excited about that. And I do hope that there are lessons to be learned and heard within the film to kind of show people the realities. You know, we try so hard sometimes to pretend things are just fine and not an issue. And I think this will really show the where we came from and the why.
And I think what bothers me sometimes is that people that aren't going through what the other person is going through seem to not care as much. And then when it happens to them, all of a sudden they're like, oh my God, this is happening to me. And I love what you guys are doing, because people should know that we should not just be quiet and wait until and do something about things until it happens to us. We should all unite and support each other to prevent it from happening, period.
Absolutely. I mean, I think culturally, you can probably understand this too, but just the truth telling is so important. And denying that things happen doesn't help anyone and doesn't make you feel safe to think it's not going to happen again. And oftentimes, I think it's really just the not recognizing and not understanding either cultural differences or even the political significance of differences.
Well, speaking of truth, I'm sorry to cut you off, but speaking of truth, I feel like, and it's kind of hard for me to say this because I work with a lot of media networks through my agency, but after COVID, after the pandemic, specifically when Azerbaijan and Armenia were fighting, I got so turned off by the media, so turned off, because I realized that they're not always covering the truth. And for the first time, I was so thankful for social media, even though all these years I've been working, you know, with social media influencers. I love the platform, but when it comes to my kids using it, I hate it. But then when media wasn't covering the war at all, they would not mention anything. And we would reach out to them and say, listen, people are dying weekly. 500 people are dying. You guys are not mentioning this. You know, it was our only way was to turn to social media to get the news. And that's what I find, that there is just so much politics and the media is so connected to the politics of everything. And sometimes the truth isn't shared properly. And how do you guys deal with that when you see something that is so not, you know, it's not, there's lack of justice and you see that this should be addressed. The media should jump on this and talk about this to prevent this from happening again. But somehow they just seem to not care because there's just not enough oil maybe there and they don't care, you know, in our case that I think that was the case, but I don't want to get into politics, but I would love your thought on that. And especially as an attorney, you know,
I don't identify as an attorney, but I will say, I mean, that's the reality of the founding of this nation. Yeah. It's in our DNA, you know, the denying of truth. And we're again now starting to speak, some circles are now speaking more openly about the truth about our founding and the truth about, you know, so many of the various cultures in this country. And that's very much, I think, a part of, think about all the new historical facts we've learned in the last couple of years. You know, we're, a lot of people are for the first time ever hearing about Juneteenth, whether that was an important date for the whole country or for Texas or whatever. I mean, the reality is we just didn't hear a lot about a lot of things.
Please remind our listeners again how they can learn more about Visions as well as donating or anything else that you guys need support. And again, the Spring Summit is coming up. So how they can register to join the webinar.
Absolutely. So again, visions-inc.org. You can find our donate button. You can find our blog to hear, you know, just our thoughts around certain topics that have come up, you know, in the last several years. You can learn more about our youth program. We work both with, you know, within the school systems and outside of schools with youth leadership. We do consulting and training for any organization. You know, again, whatever your needs are, we don't have an off the, you know, off the shelf type of menu. It's really listening to what your needs may be as an organization and working with whatever it is that you need us to work with you on. So it's a very personalized approach. Like you said, our spring summit's coming up in May. We'd love for you to join us and listen in. And, you know, we have incredible speakers from all over.
Thank you. Continue doing the amazing work that you do. And please reach out to us anytime we can support you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for giving us space to tell stories. It's so powerful.
Of course.
Thank you for joining Startup to Success with Maria on KLOS 95.5 FM HD3 SoCalArmenian.com.